Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the December 17th edition of the County Chronicles. We'll start with the first page stories. Arcola School Board, buy bonds from selves released from co-op by David Porter. The Arcola School Board approved issuing $658,800 in general obligation bonds to increase the district's working cash fund. Superintendent Tom Mulligan said these are the only bonds on the district's tax levy and will help the district maintain a one-to-one technology program, which began with community contributions. He said the bonds will enable the district to keep our commitment to the community. He said tech upgrades will cost $750,000 over the next 5 years. The bonds will incur $92,600 at 4.75% interest, but the silver lining to that cloud is that it will be paid into the education fund. The district borrowed the working cash money from its own education fund. Thus, the interest earned on the bonds will go back into the fund. Mulligan also reported that the Illinois High School Association approved the district's request to withdraw from its football co-op with Bement and Monticello. He said it looks like the district will be able to field a team on its own next year with 25 to 30 potential athletes. In other business, the board approved its tax levy with no public comment during the truth and taxation hearing held prior to the regular meeting. Approved an agreement with Ideal and Associates for asbestos removal. Approved applying for a $50,000 maintenance grant. Approved a renewal of the purchase agreement with BSN. Approved a field trip for the drama club. Approved revised job descriptions. Following administrator reports, the board approved moving Norma Martinez from paraprofessional to attendance clerk for the junior-senior high school. Mulligan noted that she's bilingual and extremely professional. The next article is from the Arcola City Council, Downtown Businesses to Shovel Own Storefronts by Nolan Morris and David Porter. Monday night, the Arcola City Council authorized Mayor Jesus Garza to sign a settlement agreement on behalf of the city with former police officer Sebastian Rivera. The $5,000 agreement is for back pay owed due to an apparent miscalculation in National Guard duty pay. Bill Wagoner, city administrator, said it was difficult to calculate a precise amount owed, but the Rivera had agreed to the settlement. During a police ordinance and enforcement committee meeting, the council discussed two pending ordinances, one having to do with snow removal downtown and the other for a festival district. Under the snow ordinance, business owners will be required to clear the sidewalks in front of their own downtown businesses within 48 hours. If they don't, they'll be subject to fees from the city for snow removal. Wagoner acknowledged at the meeting that the city owns the sidewalks. There was considerable discussion about the timeline and where businesses owners should put the snow. Alderman Matt Henson said residents are told not to put the snow from their drives onto the street. Terry Ferran said it's going to go in the street. Where else are they going to put it? Wagner said the ordinance as drafted states that it's not to go on the street, but he acknowledged that it probably will. At least the city plows could take it from there, he noted. As for the mixed message, he said, cuts both ways, as the city plows push snow onto people's driveways too. Brent Budd said he thinks the business owners will want to clear their sidewalks if they're open for business, and that 48 hours should give them enough time for it. The district festival ordinance would allow open carry of alcohol downtown in designated areas by permit for special events. Wagner said it is similar to what has been done in Tuscola and Mattoon. The idea is that there could be a band outside and people from various bars would be able to carry their beer outside to enjoy the band. It would not be allowed during the Broomcorn Festival, where alcohol is restricted to the beer tent or inside taverns. Wagner noted that if a bar breaks a rule, such as serving alcohol to a minor, the penalty would extend to the bricks and mortar bar. The new permit would be free of charge, but event organizers would need to apply for one 30 days prior to the event. Both ordinances will need to come back to the full council for approval. During the regular council meeting, the tax improved the TIF, Tax Increment Finance Committee's report, which included two agreements for JC Legacy as previously reported. These agreements are storefront renovation and interior reconstruction up to a total of $45,000. The council also approved the resignation of Gabe Mesner from the street department. Milano and Grunlow Engineers, LLC, gave an update on city projects. Two projects regarding sanitary sewer upgrades are expected to begin soon. The city has been awarded more than $3.2 million in grants between the two projects. The next article is from the Newman City Council, Water Rate Increase, Approved Bonus Pay by Nolan Morse. The Newman City Council approved a proposal presented by the Water Committee to increase the price of the per 1,000-gallon rate for water by 3%, while the base rate remains the same. A proposal to conduct a 12-week program in the senior room with a waived fee was presented to the council and put on the agenda for next month. The program is called WITS Workout and targets individuals who are 65 years or older with the goal to help retain cognitive ability. An approval to raise employee gifts by $100 was passed by the council, bringing the grand total to $700 per eligible employee. The figure is only applicable to full-time city employees, as the council voted to not include part-time workers. The city audit was presented before the council and showed the city had a total assets figure of approximately $2.8 million and a total liability figure of approximately $405,000. This brought the city to an end-of-year net position of about $1.9 million, which is around a $300,000 increase at the start of the year's net position. The next article, Teacher's Christmas Collection, A Study in Historical Decoration by David Porter. The science lab at Tuscola High School has been transformed not by chemical reaction or botany or zoology. One could argue that physics was involved, and if you stretch your imagination, though, astronomy, as in astronomical. The whole lab has become a huge museum of Christmas decor. Science teacher Robert Johnson is also a history buff, and Christmas is one of his passions. "I love to decorate for the kids," he said. "I have pets at home, so it's not a good idea to decorate there." He estimated that he has more than 500 vintage tree decorations, as well as a variety of lights and trees, some dating back to the Civil War period. The Hoopston native said he became interested in collecting Christmas decor 40 years ago while still in college. He read an article in the Danville newspaper about another collection, and he was hooked. He started by collecting figural lights that date from 1910 through 1950. They are colorful light bulbs in many different shapes, such as Santas, dogs, birds, and other animals. One in his collection is shaped like a pumpkin. The collection grew from there. Several items in his collection are family heirlooms, including a popcorn ball ornament with a face on it and a doll that belonged to his great-grandmother. He also has the family genealogist, so serving as a repository for family items is a natural extension. He said several of his biology students volunteered to help him decorate the trees in the lab. "The kids seem to really enjoy them," he said. "The kids are very careful and respectful," said Christy Taylor, a paraprofessional at the school and a student council advisor. The next article, Haynes Pleads Guilty to Murder, Gets 80 Years, by David Porter. James W. Jamie Hayes, who was sentenced to 80 years in state prison after pleading guilty to the murder of 24-year-old Morgan M.J. Harris, May 20, 2024, in Newman. All other charges against him were dismissed as part of the plea. The sentence was 40 years plus an additional 40 years due to aggravating factors. He was also fined $1,000 in order to pay costs for the suit. His sentence is to be served at 100% in the Illinois Department of Corrections. At the sentencing hearing December 10th, his public defender, Mike Zopf, asked to be released from Hayes' appeal. "I may be a material witness," he said. According to previous court testimony, Haynes and Harris had been engaged, but she planned on leaving him and changed her Facebook status from in relationship to single. Haynes originally told the police he'd been cleaning his gun when it went off and later said he was clearing the chamber but had not yet started cleaning it. He also said that everything was great between the two of them. State's attorney Robert Kozik said during a detention hearing that Haynes' comment about the relationship was deceptive. He said that evidence showed the presence of stippling, gunshot residue burned into the victim's skin, indicated the gun had been fired from a distance of 12 to 15 inches. "You don't clean a gun right in front of someone's face," Kozik said. Kozik added that the hearing that Haynes had made during several inconsistent statements and had waited 20 minutes or so before dialing 911 following the shooting. At this hearing, Judge Kate Watson noted that Haynes had a history of violence from previous charges and an inability to control his emotions amid conflict. Haynes received 570 days of time served as credit toward his sentence. The guilty plea was for murder with the intent to kill. Charges that were dismissed were for murder with strong probability of death or injury, aggravated battery with a firearm, aggravated domestic battery, involuntary manslaughter of a family member, a second murder count, and aggravated discharge of a firearm. And the final first page story, Attempted Murder Suspect Wants Speedy Trials, by David Porter. Both teams implicated in an apparent attempted murder on November 29th in Tuscola pushed to have their day in court sooner rather than later. "I'm not sitting in jail that long," DeHagee Nickerson, 19, said when he asked if he wanted to waive the 90-day requirement and push his trial date to January. Judge Kate Watson cautioned him that his attorney, public defender Mike Zopf, might not have time to prepare. Nickerson pleaded not guilty and turned down the extension. The trial is set to begin January 20, 2026. The juvenile charged along with Nickerson similarly rebuffed a continuance into February of the next year. Her trial is set to begin December 26. When her attorney, public defender Kevin Nolan, was asked whether he was seeking a continuance, he said, "You need to ask her." State's Attorney Robert Kosick signaled that he will try to seek to try her as an adult. The minor was barely audible in court and nodded her head rather than giving verbal responses. Watson admonished her twice to speak up and stop slouching. There appears no reason to not answer except that you don't want to, Watson said. Judge Watson also advised the press that they cannot use the minor's name from court records. However, the suspect was previously identified on social media by her mother as 16-year-old Caitlin Lamkin. The Chronicle has named her because she is charged with a serious crime and her name was not taken from the court record or any officer of the court. During Nickerson's hearing, Tuscola Police Officer Dakota Moore and Timothy Jimenez recounted the alleged attack on Amanda Lamkin and Matthew Wilkins. Moore said he responded to a call at 614 East Overton Street in Tuscola and found the victims bleeding. They had cuts to their faces and chests. He said they identified Nickerson as the attacker. Jimenez said Nickerson confessed to the stabbing and said that he and his girlfriend had planned the attack. Police Chief Craig Hastings previously stated that Nickerson had been found around 3 a.m. November 30th, hiding in a nearby garage. He said two kitchen knives were recovered and that Nickerson had told the police where to find one of the knives. The other knife was found in the kitchen sink, Hastings said. Following the hearing, Kosick was then asked whether he would entertain a plea bargain. He said there was no plea on the table, but it could happen. The victims were in court last week during the proceedings. When asked outside the courtroom if they'd like to talk to the press about the case, Amanda Lamkin said no comment right now. We'll move now to the obituaries. The Reverend Donald Carl Winch, 81 of Arcola, passed away at 10:30 a.m. on Sunday, December 14, 2025, at his residence. Visitation will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, December 20th, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. on Sunday, December 21st, at the funeral home. The Reverend Matthew Freshley will officiate. Burial will be held at a later date in the Arcola Cemetery. Levita Sharon Goins, 86, of Lake Paradise, Mattoon, passed away at 11:55 a.m. on Monday, December 8, 2025, at her residence, surrounded by her family. Graveside funeral service was held on Wednesday, December 10th, at the Dodge Grove Cemetery in Mattoon. Pastor Don Pankey officiated. Burial was in the Dodge Grove Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Marjorie Watkins, 97, passed away on December 12, 2025, at her home in Brentwood, Tennessee. A graveside burial service will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, December 17th, at the Arthur Cemetery with Pastor Jill Bunker officiating. Schrader Funeral Home is assisting the family with arrangements. The next article, the Vault Art Gallery hosts silent auction for the benefit of SAM Food Pantry. A silent art auction will be held to help those in need takes place on Saturday, December 20th at the Vault Art Gallery in downtown Tuscola. Artists at the Vault have donated a variety of artworks, the sale of which will benefit the SAM Food Pantry located inside the Tuscola United Methodist Church. Artists at the Vault are also collecting non-perishable food through December 31st, with all food and monetary donations going directly to the food pantry. Donation bins are located inside the Vault. Vault artist Cindy Pringle volunteers at the SAM Food Pantry, which serves residents of Douglas County. I enjoy volunteering at the food pantry on Wednesdays, Pringle said. I see that the need for food is great, and I'm happy to help in any way that I can. With the artists and community coming together, each person can make a difference. In addition to the silent art auction from 12 noon to 1 p.m., Santa Claus will be available for photographs. The Vault will also have special music from 12 to 2 p.m., pianist Kimberly Lamonto will perform, and from 2 to 4 p.m., the monthly acoustic jam will take place. Refreshments will be served. Another article, Base Winter Workshops offered free to youth at Tuscola Public Library. The Our Base, BASA program, Build, Amplify, Support, Empower, is offering creative, supportive spaces for local youth during their winter break. The Base program will host a pair of free winter workshops for area youths ages 10 to 18 at the Tuscola Public Library, 112 East Sales Street. The workshops are designed to help young people build resilience, explore creativity, and learn basic goal-setting skills. BASE staff will supervise these workshops. However, parents are asked to stay close by and returned at 2:30 p.m. for pickup. Registration is not required and all supplies will be provided. Space may be limited. The workshop schedule is as follows. Monday, December 22nd, 10 to 2:30 p.m., Ugly Sweater Creation, Authentic Self-Expression. Participants will design and decorate unique holiday sweaters and explore healthy forms of personal expression. Monday, December 29th, 1 to 2:30 p.m., Vision Boards, Smart Goal Setting. Youth will craft individualized vision boards while learning and applying the SMART method for selecting achievable goals. Our Our house base serves youth and families throughout Coles and Douglas counties. Funding for this program is provided in whole or in part by the Illinois Department of Human Services. For more information, contact Nick Spindle or call 217-218-9972. The next article is Ramblin' Man by David Porter. Snow ice cream is winter's silver lining. The snow we got Saturday was perfect for snow ice cream. Not great for driving in, but good for a sweet treat. That's one of my favorite traditions. We usually get one or two good snow ice cream days a year, and I'm bummed if we don't get any. The best snow for ice cream is, of course, fresh and clean. A light powdery snow is best. If the wind is blowing, the snow picks up dirt and debris, so you don't want that. You also want top layer snow. Snow will actually clean the air, so if the snows for a few hours, the later snow will be cleaner. I usually put a cookie pan out to collect the snow rather than scooping down into it. You want the purest, cleanest, freshest snow you can get. Start with 1 cup of milk, a cup of sugar, and a teaspoon of vanilla. Mix the ingredients. You can warm the milk to help the sugar dissolve. Then just add copious amounts of snow and stir until you get the consistency of ice cream. This recipe makes about 4 servings, about 250 calories per serving. You can adjust the amounts to taste. If it's too sweet, add a little milk and snow. I've tried using a pinch of salt and raw egg for binding. I think fewer ingredients are the best. I also use an old crock pot and a wooden spoon. It's an old-fashioned treat, so I like to use old-fashioned materials to make it. It's fun, cheap, and easy activity the whole family can enjoy, and it makes being in the snow a little more bearable. I still like snow, especially so close to Christmas. I'm too old for sledding and snowball fights, but you're never too old for snow ice cream. Now that I've had it, spring can come. Wait, it's not even officially winter yet. Not till Sunday. You mean we have 3 more months of this? 2 anyway? I don't know who decides when winter starts and ends. We had winter weather in November, and March usually brings warmer weather, so it seems like the official season changes should be adjusted back a month. Winter, at least, seems out of whack. I've seen it snow as early as October and as late as April, so who knows? Snow is a good thing. Farmers need it to replenish groundwater, which is especially important after the drought that we've had. So be patient, be thankful, be careful, and stay warm, and have another bowl of ice cream. The next article, Bobby and Betty Agree on Healthcare, I'm Just Saying, by Mike Carroll. My mom didn't like or trust doctors or hospitals, though she thought they were out to get her money. On that point, she would have agreed with our Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert Bobby F. Kennedy Jr. In a recent interview in the Atlantic magazine, January 2026, the most powerful man in science, Kennedy said, "The doctors, the hospitals, the insurance companies, and other providers, the pharmaceutical companies, are all incentivized to make money by keeping people sick." Betty Carroll would have wrapped her arms around Kennedy, hugged him, and said, "Finally, someone gets what I've been saying my whole life." My mom was as cynical about health care as Kennedy. I tried to argue with her that every doctor and hospital I dealt with tried to cure me, not keep me sick, but I was brushed aside by her logic. She argued that all the friends she knew had passed away were under medical care or in hospital, suggesting the healthcare conspiracy causation for the correlation. Yes, people are seeing doctors and going to hospitals are generally where sick people go. That's the cause of the correlation. Sick people go to places that treat sick people. I mean, you had chest pains, you don't call your tax preparer. I didn't win, and she didn't respond to argument, and instead went and made us look at iced tea. Looking back, I think it was her way of saying, "I see your point," without having to say it. I even tried Betty's logic decades ago with my former doctor, Grant Jones. I told him once, tongue-in-cheek, that I'm not going to a hospital because I saw the statistic that 50% of people die there. He quickly replied that never lie down. That's 100% correlation. I went and made him iced tea. But sometimes the medical industrial complex won her over. I remember 10 years or so before Mom passed away when I got a call that she was rushed to the emergency room with chest pains. Upon arriving, she walked into her ER room. She quickly said, "I think it was just the chair I was sitting in." I said, "Well, maybe, but let's wait and see what the test shows." Later, the cardiologist came in to explain Mom's treadmill stress showed that flat ST segments, including myocardial ischemia. Whereupon Mom interrupted his finding by saying, "Let me go home, put on my walking shoes, and I can pass that test." The cardiologist stopped talking in mid-sentence, looked at me, obviously flummoxed, as if maybe he'd missed the latest cardiology study, how type of shoes affects treadmill stress tests. Doc recovered to say he was recommending heart catheterization for tomorrow morning to check for blockages and then quickly exited. Mom looked at me and said, "They're finally going to find something and want my mom to operate. I just want my money. They just want my money. I'm going to tell them that I'm going home and think about it, maybe get a second opinion." I said, "Let's wait and see what they say. After all, you had chest pain so powerful you called an ambulance." The next day, they performed cardiac angiography. Afterwards, the cardiologist came to the waiting room to tell me they found three severely blocked coronary arteries. He said he wanted to operate later this afternoon, and it was serious. But what did my mom say? He replied, she left it up to me. It's okay with my son. It's okay with me. Puzzled, I asked, was that the first thing she said after you told her you wanted to operate this afternoon? No, he replied. Her first response is, you just want my money. I'm going to go home and think about it. Maybe get a second opinion. What did you reply? The doc said, I told her, fine, but you'll probably be dead within a few weeks. What did she say to that? I asked, and she replied, this afternoon will be fine. Well, I'll be. Mom obviously got overwhelmed by the facts of life, why the bone-hard calculations and decisions we all make about our health, about life, and reality forces upon us. Not even making a decision, burying our head in the sand, as if this scary thing staring us in the face will somehow go away, is a decision with consequences. Bypasses were performed, she recovered quickly, and went on to live almost 15 more years free of angina, full of energy. Along the way, she had hip replacement, cancer treatment, and a myriad other treatments that contributed to her living a rich and full 94 years of life. She was tough, fearless, loyal, telling you her mind if she thought you wrong, and never running from a fight, Irish to the end. Had Mother lived another 9 years or so, I think she might have liked hearing Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s expound on the vast healthcare industrial complex conspiracy view of modern medicine. She might have caught into that weird dude. The next article, Hooked on Being a Cat Daddy, by hook, line, and sinker Tony Hooker. First, there was my newfound interest in the Lord, and now, believe it or not, I've become a cat dad. For someone who is very allergic to Felis catus, which is an insane new development, one that more than 50 years I never would have predicted. Then about 10 years ago, a stray mama cat found her way into our garage when the door was broken and had a litter. We're going to gather mom and the kittens and transport them to a country barn where they and their descendants could presumably continue to live safe and free lives, all except for one. An orange and white kitty captured the heart of my son. And over my initial weak protest, I'm not exactly Rocky Gibraltar when it comes to telling my family no, Kitten Lee Hooker joined the family. Over time, he and I bonded a bit, but it was during the pandemic that our relationship grew to a point where his dominion over my behavior became complete. I was saddened when my son grew up and took him away. Now, along with seeing my grandson, seeing Kitten Lee is still a highlight of my trips to my son and daughter-in-law's house, but don't tell him that or his lovely bride. According to the Googles, the relationship between human and cats is fascinating, 10,000-year-old tale of mutual benefit, reverence, and companionship. Unlike other domesticated animals, actively bred for purpose, the cat largely domesticated itself, a fact that surprises no one who shares a living space with one. This unique partnership began in the Fertile Crescent around 10 to 12,000 years ago, coinciding with the dawn of agriculture. Wild cats were drawn to human settlements by the dens of rodents feasting on stored grain, offering a natural and efficient pest control service. Not so much for the Hookerville pride. I once sat next to my cat at the end of my bed while a mouse scampered across the room. I looked at him, only to see him looking at me with the same, "Did you see that? A mouse?" expression. Now that I'm sure that I was wearing, neither of us made a move to intercept the critter. Over time, this symbolic relationship evolved to the point where cats were not just pets, but sacred beings. In Egypt, they were associated with the goddess Bastet, symbolizing protection and fertility, and were revered to the point that where harming one could result in a death sentence. Cats were mummified and entombed, solidifying their divine status. I presume they did nothing but reinforce their sense of superiority over us puny humans. Today, the cat is one of the world's most popular pets. No longer a mouse catcher, they are cherished companions, cultural icons from internet memes to literary muses and symbols of grace and independence. The journey from a pragmatic alliance in a grain silo to a beloved member of the modern home reflects a deep, enduring, and still evolving bond. Here in Hookerville, I was content to not having any more cats after Kitten moved out, but I lost a close one-on-one vote, and soon Willow, the most beloved member of the Villa Grove branch of the Klaus, Lefebvre, and Wintz line office, came to live in our happy family. Then, when the princess moved back home to go back to school, she brought Magnolia along. Unlike previous kitties, Magnolia has proven her worth as a mouser, which brings us to this summer's addition to the pride, Dexter. He's kind of clumsy and not exactly the sharpest knife in the drawer, so Mrs. HLS has designated him as my spirit animal, and by golly, the big oaf has adopted me now. So here I sit, a cat daddy, which should never be confused with my friend Tim Wingang's usage of the term, meaning a stylish and handsome fellow, I think. They make me smile, and they're loyal as long as food or treats are involved. More importantly, they make Mrs. HLS happy, which in turn makes me happy, all of the low cost of a few cans of food and a few sneezes. Another article, gun storage, police background check changes effect taken 2026. First-time gun offenders can earn an FOID card under the new law, by Ben Szlansky, Capital News. Gun owners in Illinois must take new steps in 2026 to secure their firearms in their homes, particularly when children are present. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed Senate Bill 8, known as the Safe Gun Storage Act, in late July, which prohibits gun owners from storing their weapons in an unsecured way in any location where they know that the gun could be accessed by a minor, a person at risk of harming themselves or others, or by a person who is prohibited from possessing a firearm. Under the law, gun owners will be required to keep them in a locked container so they are inaccessible or unusable to anyone other than the owner. Owners who violate the law could be subject to fines as high as $10,000. Gun owners must also report lost or stolen firearms to the police within 48 hours of discovering a gun missing. That's down from the previous 72-hour requirement. Background check for police officers. State lawmakers passed a bill in response to the murder of Springfield resident Sonia Massey in 2024. Massey, a black woman, was killed when former Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson, a white man, shot her in the kitchen while investigating a reported prowler. Grayson was convicted of second-degree murder in October. Capital News Illinois reported in 2024 revealed that Grayson had a history of reprimands and disobeying superiors at department that had previously employed him. Under Senate Bill 1953, a police department or sheriff's office making a hire would be required to request employment personnel files from the applicant's previous employers, including other law enforcement agencies. The previous employers would be required to share the information within 14 days. Law enforcement applicants would be required to sign a document authorizing the release of information, including military service records, police discipline databases, employment and criminal history, driving records, academic credentials, a credit check, and more. I feel confident that going forward and over time, our communities and the law enforcement will have built a trusting relationship, and I'll have kept my promise to my childhood friend and Sonia's mother, Senator Doris Turner, a Springfield Democrat who sponsored the bill, knows Massey's family, said at the August news conference. Gun permits for offenders. Senate Bill 1899 creates a path for first-time gun offenders to obtain a firearm owner's identification card and legally own a gun. First-time offenders are allowed to apply for an FOID card after receiving a court order demonstrating they successfully completed the first-time weapons offense diversion program and are otherwise eligible to own a gun. The opportunity narrowly applies to people charged with Class 4 felony, which is the lowest level of charge for illegally possessing a firearm. The bill received bipartisan support in the legislature, and proponents said it would help benefit young people. Human trafficking statute of limitations. The statute of limitations on cases of human trafficking of minors is going away. House Bill 2602 removes the 25-year window for victims of involuntary servitude, involuntary sexual servitude of a minor, or trafficking to pursue charges from crimes that happened while they were a minor. They will now be allowed to bring charges at any time. Representative Ann Stava, Democrat of Naperville, said in April that the 25-year cap was protecting human traffickers who really don't deserve peace of mind. The bill passed unanimously in the General Assembly. Missing persons report. Senate Bill 24 prohibits police departments from establishing waiting periods before they accept a missing persons report. The law requires police to immediately enter information about a person reported missing into the law enforcement agency's data system. The law also requires police to keep missing persons cases open until that person is located. We have some time for briefs. Blood drives. An American Red Cross blood drive sponsored by the Arthur Ministerial Association and the Arthur's Lions Club will be held on Arthur Community on Tuesday, January 6, 2026 from 1 to 6 p.m. at the Arthur United Methodist Church Fellowship Hall. The Red Cross is asking all donors to call and or register this time instead of just walking in if possible. Walk-ins will be accepted, but the wait might be longer. One car accident victim can use as many 100 units of blood. You can make appointments online at redcrossblood.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS. That is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerke saying goodbye and see you again next week.